Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go, got to catch my shirt. My plantation, my plantation, my plantation. Ah, plantation, 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 plantation.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the Arsenal edition. This is your host, Dean. And for the first time in a long time, we have a full complement. The whole gang is here. It is I. It is Mitch. Mitch, how have you been? Where have you been?
I probably do, as you would say, doing white people shit, I think.
That's what I was going to say, doing white people shit.
As you should. Welcome back. Gabby's here, as you heard.
Yep, I'm back again.
And of course, Coach is here. What's going on, Coach?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I've
got shut the fuck up, Coach. I don't care how the fuck you're doing. Last time you were talking all this shit about Fabio Vieira is going to start, blah, 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 blah. Explain to me why Fabio Vieira didn't start. I lost my rent
money. We're starting out hot.
I lost my rent money on FanDuel, bro. Why didn't he start?
He's lying, by the way. Ben, I'm not sorry. Dean is not a degenerate gambler, so. But I am.
That's not
the case. It's very humbling to know that you don't know anything about the sport. Like, it's incredibly humbling. And I welcome it because it's an opportunity to learn, you know? I'm not going to say too much other than the fact that on the balance of the game, watching it, it was still a game for him, but I totally understand why Arteta didn't, because it's the business end of the season. Like, if you got a fully fit squad, even if they've got some mileage in them, I suppose you have to go with what's trusted. I just feel as if with the rotation that he was making and knowing that you got Bayern on Tuesday, there's an opportunity there to potentially get some more minutes into players that haven't been playing recently. But it is what it is. He still played, and he played for like 45 seconds, and he did some reasonably good things, guys. You know,
yeah.
There was at least two shot creating actions he was involved in. So I left him something.
Yeah, he tried to drop kick someone in the neck. You know, like that was fucking awesome. Mitch, Fabio Vieira is your guy. How much do you think he's going to contribute towards the rest of the season?
I have no idea. I feel like attacking midfielder is kind of a weird role at Arsenal right now, because our best attacking midfielder is obviously Martin Odegaard, and he's our captain, so he's going to be playing 90 minutes most games. Like, even in a game like Luton last week, where we rotated a shit ton, Martin still played like almost 90 minutes. So I think it's just like a tough situation for players like Smith Rowe and Vieira, because I think I think from here on out, and you know, this is just from what we've seen this year and why Arsenal's been in such good form, like, we've been so efficient with this Rice-Jorginho pivot, there's no reason to move away from it anytime soon. Which makes it tougher for someone like Smith Rowe or Fabio Vieira, who would probably fit in pretty well as like a left eight. But we're not really playing that right now, because we're playing a little bit more just wanting to control games by playing defensive. And it's been very, very effective. We're in fucking April and we've conceded 4 goals. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Fair enough. Let's talk more of the lineup. We had Raya, White, Saliba, Gabriel, Zinchenko, Rice, Jorginho, Odegaard, Saka, Jesus, Havertz. Gabby, was any of this surprising to you? I know there was a bit of unpredictability given the rotation from the last game, so we weren't sure of what was going to happen, which is why Coach cost me all that money. But was there anything that you saw that you didn't expect?
The only thing that I didn't expect was no Martinelli, which was shocking to me, at least starting him. And we started with Georgie in the midfield again, because I'm assuming Georgie's going to start against Bayern. And I was like, starting two back-to-back games when you have your other boy on the bench is maybe a little bit touch and go there. And he played 90 minutes. So that was a lot on his legs. But other than that, this is exactly what I expected the lineup to be. I knew Zinchenko was going to start. I didn't really want him to start, but that's just a personal preference.
We will get to that. There will be an entire discussion on this. I don't want to have the discussion, but I think we have to have the discussion. Saka played. I don't know that he particularly looked fit. Coach, are you worried yet?
He admitted after the game, he said that he was struggling. Yeah. He said he was struggling after the game. So and when he said it with a smile, I was just like, so maybe he's just, maybe it's just like a niggle that hasn't really recovered yet. But if he's fit enough to play and to miss a chance like that, then yeah, I feel like he's probably not that far away from making a recovery. But in the Premier League, and I love it's a theme with, you know, our good coaches we had in the Premier League, we always put out, like, Wenger was king of it. Before Champions League game, he put out his strongest 11 if he could, like, because he always prioritised the league anyway. And Arteta seems to be following the same suit. Before Champions League game in the title race, if you can put out your strongest 11, you probably should, especially there's no guarantees. We don't know what we're going to win this season kind of thing. So put your best foot forward every time. So if he's past fit to play, I don't see the reason why he shouldn't. It's Brighton away. They've lost one game at home this entire season, and that was in August. So you have to, if you can get away with it, you should play your strongest 11. So
I mean, I barred awesome. Him from saying the phrase, but we already know what he's thinking about Saka.
Yeah. Don't worry. We're saying that for a bit later, and it's for somebody else. So.
The game started, and my first memory is that we had a free kick that Martin Odegaard swung in, and Gabriel missed a chance. But we created a bunch of chances after that as well. However, I mostly remember Brighton kind of cutting through us with ease, which was why Coach and I on the Luton episode, on the last episode of this Arsenal edition, we thought that Brighton might be a problem for us because their build-up game. I mean, Roberto De Zerbi is renowned for his build-up. Mm-hmm. Gabby, I know we won and all, but do you accept that we had a reason to be somewhat scared of Brighton?
You tried to softball me that, like, I wasn't going to say, I told you so. That's okay. They were cutting through us with ease. And that was nasty to watch. Their midfielders were just eating up so much grass. Like, it looked like we had no midfield. It looked like, I know we had Declan Rice out there, but it looked like we had Francis Coquelin and people were just running past him. Like, that's what it looked like. I don't know where people were. I don't know if the game plan was to shift elsewhere. Jesus was on an island, but he was tracking back to help Zinchenko, and Zinchenko was shifting inside. But there was never anybody inside. Like, everybody was so pushed forward, and the back line was so separated from everybody else. It was just, like, space galore everywhere. But the good thing is Brighton don't know how to score. So I'll take it.
Fair enough. Mitch, I was going to ask you about Carlos Baleba, but Gabby brought something else up. All that space in our midfield, do you think we got something wrong from a personnel or maybe a tactical standpoint? Maybe our press was off? Because I remember them coming to the Emirates, and they didn't have this much freedom at the Emirates. And sure, a home team is going to play better by default, but it kind of felt like we got something wrong in that first half, even if we did dominate it.
You know, one thing I was thinking about when I was watching us press from the front is the selections of our press, because it's always interesting to me, and I think most of the time it's a pressing trigger. Like, you'll have, like, a player where it's like they get on the ball, you're going to press them. But I do wonder, like, what's going through Martin Odegaard or Kai Havertz's minds of, like, who are we going to press or when are we going to press? Because sometimes we let them have the ball, sometimes we let them play, and sometimes we're running at them. And I wonder, I don't fully know what fully triggers our press. Granted, I do think Brighton did a good job of playing through the press. Like, I want to give more credit to them than we did anything, like, tactically wrong with them playing through, because I feel like they just did a really, really good job of playing through the press. And that's how De Zerbi's teams are built. He wants to play off in the back. That like they have the personnel to do that. And I think they did an effective job. I don't think it was necessarily the fault of our press or anything like that. I think that when it comes to like lineup, and I know we mentioned Zinchenko, I'm going to talk about Zinchenko for just a second here, because I do think that the balance was a little bit off with defending and stuff like that because of Zinchenko. I just feel like we're more, especially if we want to play a double pivot with Jorginho, I think that we're just way better off having someone like Tomiyasu or Kivior playing left back. We're more defensively secured. We don't have someone that's being targeted, because Brighton were very, very clearly targeting Zinchenko. Like they were running at him very easily. And like you don't see a lot of Premier League players receive the ball on the wing and just start fucking running at a guy unless you're like, oh, I know I can beat you. And Zinchenko is that kind of player, and it made me very nervous in that first half. It made me nervous when I saw the lineup, because I wanted Kivior to start. It made me nervous during that first half. I wanted Zinchenko hooked at the half. I'm going to be completely honest. And I've been on the record on this podcast for being a Zinchenko fan. I think that he is a really quality player. I do think that our system has kind of moved past him. I think he elevated our team to a really high degree last year because of what he was able to do inverting and how we were able to play out the back with Zinchenko. But I think the trade-off has become too large of a valley for what he's providing on the ball. I think he lost possession a couple times in dangerous areas and is just not assured enough when a guy's running at him for us to be like, warrant starting him when we want to just close the fuck down another team. And we're going to be way better at that when we have someone like Kivior or Tomiyasu. And I, with the way that we've been playing with our midfield setup, I don't think we really lose anything on the ball by not playing Zinchenko, just based on how this current team is set up.
Well said. I think it's important. I think it's actually a good point you brought up about our left back, because for comparison, Brighton's left back, Estupiñán, and this speaks to Brighton's build up. He had 80 touches this game, and like a 93% pass completion. Right? Do you know one of who's Arsenal's highest touch player this game was?
Was it Saliba?
It was Gabriel with like 70, guys. Like it's one of those with Brighton, and it's the strength of the Premier League again. There's certain games where even if you're a top side, you're going to suffer. You have to learn to suffer. It's just the law of the land now. You go to Amex Stadium. At times, you even go to Palace. You know, there's a washing machine at Palace. People that know like Palace can be a tough place to go to. There's plenty of grounds in the Premier League where you just have to adjust your game, regardless of if you've got much better players than the other side. But I think looking at the way they sucked us in, because the key thing here was the fact that they
I'm sorry.
Oh my god, this is a terrible podcast. We
The key thing here was someone like Belaba basically not actually being involved in the build up and getting involved a bit later on. So Stupinian being able to attract Saka and then attract Odegaard over, basically that lane now opens up in the middle, and he's so good on the ball that, you know, he can it was late in the second half where Martinelli was pressuring him and he was weaving in and out of pressure basically until he finally won the foul kind of thing. And having those sorts of players are key to De Zerbi's tactics. You need to be able to have players that can attract players over to open up passing lanes. And they're happy to be patient and hold the ball for like 10 minutes if it means they're going to get a gap, basically. And it kept on happening. But a good thing for us on our side was we had good numbers back in general anyway. But every time they did gallop forward, I did worry a little bit early because it was raining. And I was thinking, oh, gosh, if a player slips here, they're completely in now. But I didn't really have faith in their final ball. Adingra, great player. Like, you know, we saw on the F1 kind of thing. But final ball's not all there. And Ciso, who... I want to spend about 10 minutes calling him every single kind of see you next Tuesday, but I won't. But yeah, those type of players are very flashy, but they're not killers. Do you know what I mean? They're really not killers. Welbeck, we know him, watching him at Arsenal, fantastic link-up player, not a killer kind of thing. So they'd get through, but the players that they will be passing to aren't really going to hurt us. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I wasn't best pleased with that first half, but tactically, and I'll say it since he's based on an interview, tactically you're gonna be in for a tough time against Brighton. He even said that they'd done something against Liverpool that he'd done again today, and he didn't want to reveal it, but he was just like, it made it very, very hard for us. And you saw it, like Declan Rice looked really good today, but he was doing a lot of running back towards his own goal as well. That's not how you really want Declan. He has no problem doing it, but that's not how you want him. That's not how you want Declan Rice play. You want him actually smashing into his man, like not letting him turn, rather than having to make recovery tackles. So, yeah.
Fair enough. Gabby, I don't feel as if we've been mean enough to Zinchenko. So I'm gonna ask you a question. Like, generally, I've always, when I'm gonna say always, but I just feel as if what Jorginho brings to the team and what Zinchenko brings to the team kind of overlap enough that I feel as if it's a bit redundant to put them.
You don't say.
Go ahead.
You don't say. I'll be the villain because Jorginho and Zinchenko should never play together again, period. They should never play together again. Mitch touched on it earlier when he was talking about Zinchenko. The things that he brings to the team and the counterbalance of what he lacks in defense, you can get any of those things from Jorginho. They're on top of each other. Mm-hmm. They basically play the same position and they do the exact same things. What, like, you bring Zinchenko in to be a metronome, to keep the midfield ticking, to get the ball forward, to do that vertical passing, because he's not overlapping. That's not his thing. He's not just a regular fullback like Ben White. You just want to just overlap and then get back. He's not doing that. But because he's doing that, because he's doing the I'm a midfielder even though I'm a fullback thing, it just, you're on top of everybody else. You're on top of Jorginho, who's like, was not on the ball as much as I wanted, and ever, like, the sloppy passes was already a problem in the first half. And then you're leaving that space behind you. So Jesus, who's on the touchline, like, has to cover that, or Gabriel has to slide over or whatever, or Declan Rice has to come out of the midfield and slide into that spot. Somebody's going to be out of position because Zinchenko's moving forward. I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm not a fan. Call me a traditionalist or whatever. I would rather want my defender to be a defender first, period. I want my defender to be a defender first. I don't know how else to say it. I just, what he brings to the team, you can get from an actual midfielder in midfield. Just do that.
Right. Yeah, just keep the progression with the progressors in midfield.
Yeah, I mean, there's literally a moment where Jesus has the ball and he's looking into the box to see what he can do. And I was like, please don't do hinky-jinky and do nonsense for once. And there's space behind him because I think there was two defenders on him. There's space behind him, and I'm thinking, Zinchenko, just overlap so you can get the ball and cross into the box. Just overlap. No, you don't want to do that shit. He's gonna be midfield, whatever. I was like, all right, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah, not his bag. Despite our complaints about Zinchenko, though, Brighton, as we suggested earlier, did not create a whole lot in that first half, and all the best chances in the first half, I would say, outside of a shot from Enciso that we'll talk about a little bit later.
I'm sorry, he's a little busted, man. I'm sorry. I can't hold it anymore. Seriously.
I did so hard. I wish you guys could see the video.
Oh, man. Okay, so do you remember a couple years ago when we lost to Newcastle and Callum Wilson played the best game of his life, right? He played so hard that day because it wasn't about Newcastle winning. It was about ruining Arsenal's Champions League hopes. That's what it felt like. And Enciso came with the same energy today. They won the corner in the second minute of the game, and he's ramping up the crowd, going nuts. Yeah, like, I'm thinking, bro, what is not being funny? You're not gonna get a move off this performance. Like, so stop playing so hard. Like, you're not going to get one. You know what I mean? And then gone.
He scored the best goal of the season, allegedly. Last season. He's one of the premier ball strikers in the Premier League. So
couldn't care less. We've got a title to win. You need to relax. Then he's all getting in players' faces, like, you know, getting a bit feisty and whatnot.
You're South American, bro. You know how this works.
Exactly. You know the narrative with Arsenal. You know it. They're soft.
Yeah.
Get at them. Blah blah blah. You can get them rattled.
Why are you getting mad at a player for, like, trying to play well?
Trying too hard, man. What? Okay, I can guarantee you, what Brighton's next game, he's not going to play that hard. I can guarantee you. I'm going to make sure I watch Brighton's next game just to confirm. Well, it always happens.
Coach, I would say you should feel flattered because people are trying hard against Arsenal again.
No.
Yeah.
They didn't always do this. They didn't always
he needs to have that same energy for Man City, but I guarantee you that he won't. I guarantee
he scored that goal against them.
They had already won the league by then.
This is true, but we don't talk about that on this podcast. Shut the fuck up with that. Yeah. Mitch, we missed a bunch of chances between like the 10th and 20th minute. I started thinking to myself, like, is it going to be one of those days? Did you feel the same way?
I think normally I would, except I felt like the chances that we were creating were really quality and we had a lot more space to work with that it made me not as worried about that. Like, in those games against Brentford this season, and we're like missing chances earlier on and not putting it away, those weren't like as clear cut as these ones were. Like, first minute, Gabriel like has a great header opportunity and just hits it off frame. Saka has a shot that he makes 9 out of 10 times and he completely missed. Jesus had a wonderful shot that was a great save from Brighton's goalkeeper. Like, we had a lot of really good chances.
The header as well.
What's up?
The header as well.
Yeah,
Gabriel had
it. Yeah, no, Gabby Jesus.
Yeah,
I still can't remember that.
It was like a back post chance, and then like Kai, like beat Lewis Dunk, hits the ball across the face of goal, and no one's there. Like, we're creating,
that one made
like,
my head hot.
we're creating some like really really good chances early on, which made me not as worried that we would get a breakthrough because it wasn't Brighton were trying to play like the way that they were like. Trying to play out of our press, like they weren't just like hitting long balls and praying, like they were trying to play their own game. So I knew that there was going to be space available for us later in the game, it wasn't fully worrying when we were missing those, although it's still like, hey, score your chances, because that's how you right. just get fucking you pay for it.
I would say anyone can take this, but which one of those chances in that period that Mitch just talked about was the worst miss?
Saka's. Easily.
Yes, 100%. For me, it's Saka and then Gabriel's. That free kick header.
Because the Gabriel one is basically a penalty. Like, when the ball is up in the air like that for Gabriel in this form, it's a penalty, basically. So, yeah.
Both. Yeah,
he looked up to the heavens like, what did I just do?
Yeah.
I don't think he combed his line out.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's going on there, man. Let's just get to the first goal then. Tyrick Lamptey, basically, from my perspective, Lee Dixon felt very differently.
Oh, I have to Lee Dixon real quick. Bitch ass.
Hold on, folks. I know everybody wants to get in on this, but it seemed like a very obvious penalty to me. But I'm now of the belief, I think I felt this way for a while, and it's not just about Arsenal or any specific team, but I get the sense that a lot of these broadcasters have given their commentators and their analysts instructions to make every potential game-changing decision a ref makes, make it seem like a controversy, because it means that it's more content for us to pop on social media and get bites on and whatnot. Mitch, you seem pretty eager to jump in on this. What did you think about Lee Dixon going on and on about it not being a penalty, even though it was the most obvious penalty I think we've gotten this season?
Yeah, I love Peter Drury. I think he's fucking wonderful.
I think he's shit.
Okay. It pisses me the fuck off that every single time he commentates a game, Lee Dixon's always with him. Because I think I can understand where Lee Dixon is probably thinking, where he's like, yeah, I was an Arsenal legend, but like, I don't wanna be like come across as super biased. But he's overcorrected. He's gone so fucking far in the other direction where, like, I don't think he has said a positive thing about Arsenal in, like, any game that he's commentated for.
Ever.
Where you'd think he was a fucking Tottenham legend with the way he talks about us. And it's just absurd to me. Like, dude, every single one of Fergie's kids is a homer for Man United to the fucking death. Just do that. You're, like, one of our few representations. Just do that. Just be a fucking homer. No one gives a shit. If you're a homer, all you're doing is just like making Arsenal fans fucking pissed off at you. And I just hate hearing your voice now because you're just like always an asshole about it. And then with the penalty, I think it's really fucking stupid that people are acting like any touch of the ball absolves you from making a bad tackle. Lamptey made a bad tackle. him barely touching the ball does not absolve him from that. That's just not how the game works. Like, that is a correct penalty every day of the week. It's as clear as they come. And him, like, barely touching the ball doesn't even change the direction of the ball, by the way. Like, does not absolve him from making a bad tackle. He got. Gabriel Jesus beat him. Like, sorry, that's just how it is.
Yeah, very well said. It just seems so obvious to me. So the fact that we're even talking about it feels a bit like a defeat. I feel like we've already lost by even acknowledging this bullshit. But Gabby, Saka took and scored the penalty with very little fuss. But did you think he was actually going to take the penalty?
Yes, I did. But before we go to Saka, fuck Lee Dixon. I don't give a fuck. He's no more, he's not my Arsenal legend. That's all I have to say. I don't care. Fuck that guy. I can't stand listening to his commentary if I have to listen to him one more time for the rest of the season. Anyway, on to Saka. I did think he was going to take it. When, like, we've been doing this gimmick where, like, Martin Odegaard or someone else goes up and holds the ball for a little while, and then Saka eventually takes it. So that's what I thought was going to happen, and that's what happened. And then I just said, just score it. And I didn't think he wasn't going to score it. I was just like, I just need us to ease the nerves a little bit because we missed a few chances already. Like, just put the ball into the back of the net and then we can grow into the game. And he did.
Well said, my friend. Coach, you watch a slightly different feed from us. Well, not slightly, fully different because you live in the UK and we live in America. Was it the same kind of bullshit over there where they're showing replays over and over again and trying to make people think that something strange had happened here?
Yeah, and it's really deliberate, and I'm not into conspiracy theories, but it just feels really sinister, man. Like, it almost feels as if they're trying to almost push the idea that, oh, Arsenal were fortunate kind of thing. And, you know, it's like, you have to remember, everybody watches this, like everybody, the referees, everyone watches this kind of thing now. And it's almost feels as if now they're going to see, like, everyone, you know, teams going to see this, the referees are going to see this kind of thing. And I'm not saying it's going to make them more hesitant to give penalties now, but it's just going to be a thing now where it's like they've showed it enough now, made it seem as if it was actually a discussion. There was no discussion to be had, like, at all. Simple fact is, Jesus just beat him, like, and that was it. Bad tackle, penalty, move on. You know, if we're going to go back, if we're going to go back just earlier today in the Palace game, Radio on, I think it was Mateta, does the exact same foul that Dalo did on Rodri earlier this season, Rodri or Diaz, I think, earlier this season, but one of them's a pen and one of them isn't, you know? Mm-hmm. It's that kind of, and there was no discussion about that at all today, and it's so strange. But when Arsenal have a stone wall, you're showing, and they even got out the sports camera angle that they brought out the other day, bro, for this penalty. Like, it's a joke.
Wow.
Wow. The Inception camera, the Chris Nolan cameras.
Honestly, the Chris Nolan, man, like, they were going nuts of it. So yeah, I don't like it personally. Like, I just think there's no need for it, and you know, it's just putting question marks there. You know, like, I don't really like that at all. So
it wasn't even like a did he go down like softly or something like that. Like, he literally tripped him. Like, what do you mean? He tried to jump over the tackle and he still got hit. Like, what?
Put like this shit. In referee training, like, section and stuff, they're going to have that as a textbook stonewall penalty. That's how much of a stonewall penalty it was. But the broadcasters and, you know, whoever else want to make it seem as if it was something that it wasn't. So, yeah.
Mitch, David Raya has been damned with faint praise in that Arsenal gives nothing away anyway. So he doesn't have much to do. And that is why we should occasionally play Ramsdale, because he's really personable and goes on podcasts and shit and all that. But, and Ciso, we mentioned his ball striking earlier. He had a pretty decent go at it, and that was going in the top corner. And David Raya, all 6 foot of him, got across the goal and made a great save, which now means that he's the first goalkeeper in Arsenal history to keep a clean sheet in 5 consecutive away league appearances.
Wait, first time since 1997.
All right, well, sure, you're right. I mean,
he's the first Spanish one, too.
Fabio Vieira. Fuck you, coach. I would like you, Mitch, given the fact that you're tall and you're a goalkeeper, to give David Raya some love, because given the fact that we play the way we play and the fact that he rarely has a lot to do, I think people sort of underestimate his contribution to what we've been doing of the last, at least, let's just say this year. where we've been indomitable, where we've scored 22 goals away from home and conceded one goal in 4 wins and 1 draw. Show him something, Mitch.
I think it is really funny that you describe me as tall, which is true.
You are
tall. I'm only an inch taller than Raya, who's 6 foot, who's called short as a goalkeeper. But yeah, incredible save. Really, really, like every replay that they showed made the save more impressive. I don't know if it was like full, like, Ramsdale against Madison in his first season kind of thing, but it was an excellent save. And in that current game state, it was absolutely needed. It was huge. And yeah, I think like the whole conversation about Raya as a whole this season, and I've said this before, I think it's just so shrouded around people liking Ramsdale. Like it's a business move where it's like, yeah, we became like a little less likable. And that's not even like a shot at Raya. That's just like Ramsdale's a likable guy. He just kind of gets shit done, is really calm, great on the ball. Like there was times when we were building up earlier in the half where he was like basically playing as a midfielder, which is, you know, a great situation to have as a goalkeeper. He's such a quality player. He's one of the reasons we're in this position, even though, yeah, we don't give up all that many opportunities, but when those opportunities come, he's most of the time he's there to save it. He's not like a bad I'd say he's probably a below average shot stopper, just like statistically, but like he's not a bad shot stopper by any means. And if you have a setup where you have a player like him playing behind a defense that doesn't give up many chances, you're able to have that trade-off really nicely where he's really, really good on the ball. And he's been wonderful, and he's going to be one of the main reasons why I think we win silverware this season.
Gabby, what'd you make of his kicking today?
That was very. I don't know. It was like me watching this entire game, the back line in general. I mean, granted, Saliba and Gabriel were great, but like. Everybody was like sloppy passes for a while, and it just like leaked over into Raya, and like we were trying to play out of the back and like kind of getting shut down a little bit. So when we went long, it just went nowhere, and I was just like, what's happening? Like, is it the rain? He wasn't slipping like he did in, like a couple games ago. So I was just very confused as to what was going on. That was the worst part of his performance. I mean, he didn't have much to do other than that save. But that the kicking was not good today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even so, I can't really find a reason to critique him. Yeah. I remember watching, I don't know if you guys saw that clip of him at Spain training where he was in a Rondo with a bunch of guys, and he looked like the best technician in the Rondo. And I was like,
listen, yo. That man said he wants to be a midfielder. He said he would be a defensive midfielder if he wasn't a goalkeeper, and I believe him.
You know, it's a funny thing. I just had a flashback to when Unai Emery put Cech in a Rondo, and Cech was all doing, he's trying his best.
And why would you bring that?
I'm just saying that the imagery is just spinning me because he had his helmet on and everything. He looked like a deer in headlights, you know, trying to play football. Like it was incredible, man. But yeah, thank God for progress, man. Because
thank God for progress. I mean, like we literally had a 6'4" sentient condom in our net that almost kicked the ball in the net on opening day of the season. Like, what the fuck was that shit? What the fuck was that shit like? I've never hated Chelsea more than in that moment.
Do you know what's the funny thing I remember about that game, right? That was the last game I went to before I had like I think almost 4-year hiatus from watching Arsenal, like, because...
You needed a deep cleanse.
It was. I knew what Unai Emery was from like a year before he came to the club. I just knew exactly what he was, right? And then opening day just
confirmed. And what is that? And what is that exactly?
A loser. Just a loser. Don't flash no UEFA cups in my face. I don't care about that. Like, it is what it is. He's, for the top level, he's a loser. Like that, and that's it. So yeah, I literally took a hiatus. It was crazy. I saw enough. You know,
that was it. The group chat was tense in that area. It was very. We were fighting all the time. I was like, "Why are you so negative, bro?" But I was over here like, fuck, I hate my life. I want to kill myself. I hate my mom. I hate my girl. I hate everything.
Oh, right. I'm so glad I didn't have a group chat back then. Because I would be the same way. The group chat last year was terrible. So I can't imagine it during that era.
Oh, man.
It was fucking awful. But on to better things. Today, I think it's very clear who the man of the match was.
Yeah.
He's a man that is German. He's a man that is tall, like Mitch. He's a man that looks like Mitch. And even though I was going to throw this to Mitch, Coach is twitching. So, Coach, go ahead and talk about Kai Havertz.
Well. We're back here again. Mr. Bar of Soap.
No! I said it was barred from the pod.
Kai Havertz, I think, has started every single league game this calendar year, right? He's played the most minutes to my recollection, and guess what? He's got the most goal involvements out of everyone in the last, I think, 6 or 7 league games, if I remember correctly. I think they had a graphic up as well. I think he's got the same amount as like Cole Palmer in the last 7 or 8 games, something like that. I can't remember. But
yeah, stop talking about these bitch ass niggas over here, man.
This is up there one of his best performances of the season. We simply don't win this game without Kai Havertz today. And it's nice to have a center forward to say that your center forward won you the game today. Despite us having a really good defense, we still need people to put the ball in the back of the net and to occupy defenders and to make life difficult for them. And one of my favorite things about Havertz's performance today is that despite him being on that the edge of that yellow card is going to get suspended, he didn't pull out of any challenges. Do you know what I mean? He was there. He was there, like, making sure that they're not getting out. Essentially, if I can make sure they don't get out like easily, then I will. Going back towards his own goal, I counted like 2 or 3 times where he's plugged gaps where players are out of position and he sprinted like an Arabian racehorse to get there, basically. He's an all-action centre-forward. It's actually kind of crazy because he still has this very laid-back manner, but you watch him play and he's doing it with like the most relaxed face, but he's working his ass off. He's a player that I would describe the most as an enigma in this Arsenal squad by far.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
I was going to say, I think he's the most Mikel Arteta signing since like Ben White and Odegaard.
I think it's so hard to pin him down. Like Arteta said in his post-match that he sees him playing in 3 positions, right? But Arsenal's best form this season has come from him playing up front. He's just a bit on his goal, actually, right? He made that double movement that Lokia spoke about the other day, right? But that's a movement that all the best strikers make. Robin van Persie was the king of it, like absolute king of it. I remember him describing it once where he was like, it was almost like tongue in cheek. He was like, okay, this one here is for the defender and this one here is for me, kind of thing. That's how he would describe his runs. And Havertz did pretty much the exact same thing. He threw them out of position there, then went into the space, easy tapping, basically. And those are striking instincts that I was worried about that I didn't feel like he had, but he's developing them now. The person that set him up was Jorginho, like on the right wing. But it seems to be a thing where it doesn't matter who's in those positions. If they're in a position, he's going to make those type of runs and he should be able to get onto the end of things, man. But I suppose my favorite thing about him, that he looked like the one today that was really, really up for it from day one. But yeah, anybody that wants to add on to that, please, because I could talk about him all day. I think he was by far our best player today.
Oh, I'll let Mitch go before I have things to say.
I think we've had a lot of conversations about Kai Havertz. It's like, oh, what's his best position? Like, where's he gonna play? And I still think that he can do a job as a midfielder. And be a left eight. But I fully think that from here on out to the end of the season, he is our starting striker.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think it's depending on the who are playing. Like, he is our striker from here to the end of the season. That's fine by me because he's been wonderful. I do love watching Kai Havertz, and I really do love Kai Havertz. He is such a gangly motherfucker. Like, he's just like
big fucking German right there.
He looks so unathletic sometimes. And I think that's why people like kind of shit on him a little bit, because sometimes it's like, man, what are you doing? But he is like very, very smart and good at what he's doing, even though he looks really gangly and like all over the place sometimes.
Gabby, Lewis Dunk had what I would call a not good day. But he also had a not good day against Romelu Lukaku at international level and at club level. So I guess the question I'm going to ask you is, who's the better center forward,
Or who's the better Lewis Dunk father, Kai Havertz or Romelu Lukaku?
Well, I'm definitely not going to say the guy who plays with Tim's on his feet. It's definitely Kai Havertz. I love my big freaking German. I love him so much. I agree with Mitch. He's going to be our center forward for the rest of the season. Although I will say all those people who are expecting him to not be in midfield come next season, you're going to have a rude awakening, because I know Mikel has a plan for him, and that was his plan at the beginning of the season. That's why he bought him. He bought him for his versatility, and I know he's going to put him there again. Like, he just is. So just get over it now. You're going to see him there again. But Kai did everything good in this game. Even if he didn't score that goal, he would still got man of the match for me, genuinely. He was just I thought a lot of our attacks, like, I know we missed a lot of chances in that first half, but I was begging for them to do the ball over the top. Get the ball over the top to Kai so he can run in and stretch the defense a little bit. He's going up against Dunk. That guy is not a runner. Like, let him run at him a little bit. And he created so many chances for us. It's actually crazy. Like, I mean, we talked about it earlier, but like that chance that he gets the ball from Ben and just like gets his toe on it and puts it across the top of the box is crazy. I didn't even expect him to get to that at all. Genuinely, he's sandwiched in between two defenders getting to that ball. His physicality is something that we have missed in this team for so long. And I know we have it in the defense, but we haven't really had it in the attack. Because I know Lacazette has an ass on him, but he wasn't doing much with it. He just bothers defenses. He just does. Like, you just can't leave him. He floats, so you can't leave him unmarked. And even if you are marking him, he's fighting for everything. Like, I love watching Kai play. Genuinely, he's been one of our best players this season. I mean, he's a little bit down the pecking order, but like, he's had a really good season for us. Hit double digits in goals and assists already, I think.
Yeah, I think he's not the 14 mark, I think, total. And yeah. I believe, I didn't go back to listen, but at some point when we were whining about Kai and trying to figure out what he was and what he's going to do for us this season, I think we all sort of settled on, if he gets to 15 combined, then it would have been a good season for him. And he's clearly going to exceed that. So, Coach, I'm going to have you make a prediction. And don't fucking cost me any more money, you prick. How many goals and assists combined will Kai Havertz get at the end of the season?
I'm not going to talk assists, but I think in the league, I think he's probably going to finish. We've got seven games that he's probably going to finish with in the league. He's on 9 now, I think. He's going to finish with like 13 or 14 goals in the league, I think. Which isn't a bad return, you know.
At all. Especially since he's not.
And it's more than Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus hasn't really played, to be fair. You know, like. But yeah. Mitch, overall, considering everything we know, based on the sample size and everything, all the information we have, who, and forget the season context, just more, who is the better center forward, Kai Havertz or Gabriel Jesus?
I think it depends on what you want. Because I like, one thing I really like about them both as options is that they provide different things. Like, Gabriel Jesus is a very unconventional striker because he's much more dribbly than a lot of other number nines. Is, I think, a traditional nine doesn't love to be on the ball. And I think that maybe fits high a little bit more. He's able to hold up play effectively, but he's not like getting on the ball and trying to dribble a whole bunch the way that Gabriel Jesus will. I think that adds a different dimension when you can pass it to your nine who's going to turn on the ball and dribble at center back, because you just don't see that all that often. So I really just think it's a matter of preference. I think I prefer Kai right now. And I think just like how we're built, it's better, especially as an outlet. Like, Kai drew a yellow today off of a Rea punt, just by being big and being a big presence. And so you have that kind of presence where you can win second ball, but you can also draw fouls, draw yellow, and move yourself up the pitch, is a really, really effective trait that I don't think is talked about all that much. And I really love seeing Kai Havertz as a center forward. It's great.
Coach, where are you on that one?
You already know what I want to say, but our strongest 11, this going forward, I don't see Kai Havertz not in it, basically. But I think our best striker and to be fair, I know he's had a very, very bad season. Like, he's our best striker, Gabby Jesus, and I think he's in the conversation of being our best player as well. So it's just it's a funny thing. Like, they both, what's good about them both is that they can obviously both play together. That's the key thing here. They can obviously both play together, and that's what good players are, basically. They both adapt, you know. I think one of my favorites of the season was, I think, Jesus' header against Luton, where Havertz takes two or three defenders with him, and Jesus literally cannot miss. Today, again, they struck up a good partnership where Jesus probably should have scored from a header, from a Kai cross. But just from a personal preference, I like strikers that can take the ball and can create for themselves. I just think that's an invaluable trait. But I can't shit on Kai. Kai is genuinely phenomenal. And I will say, and this is a statement I will back, I think Kai arguably is probably our most intelligent player. I don't think that's outlandish to think, just because of the level that Arsenal are playing to. It's a lot to do with his intelligence. You know, his understanding of space, his understanding with other players, his understanding of sussing out danger and passing lanes. These are all things that are not all physical attributes. These are things that you have to think about. You have to just have a sense for as a footballer, kind of thing. I think his football IQ is through the roof, generally.
That feels a little racist to me, but we'll just move on. We're not going to dwell on it. We're just going to move on.
Listen, I was just going to say, a guy who went to Chelsea and won a Champions League, was very highly sought after when he was at Bayer Leverkusen, was looked at by Real Madrid and at Bayern in the summer, and became Mikel Arteta. That's a good player, okay?
I'll say this much. Years ago in the chat, Coach, I don't know if you remember this, but when Kai Havertz first emerged, I remember telling you guys that, you know, there's a lineage in Germany of, you know, that guy. You know, it started with Beckenbauer, then it became Matthäus, then it was Michael Ballack. And I thought that Havertz was the next one, but when he went to Chelsea, he kind of fell off a bit, and I was like, nah, it's not him. And I was going to move on to Wirtz immediately, but I think he's back.
I think he's back, and I think the key thing here is he's done it on his terms. He hasn't had like an easy ride, you know, a lot of pressure on him going to Chelsea, costing all that money. Yeah, he won them a Champions League, but any Chelsea fan last season will tell you that they were glad to see him go. I think there was very, very few Chelsea fans. And then look at the move to Arsenal. I mean, I was one of them.
Except Johnny Minerals.
Shout out Johnny Minerals.
But yeah, like, even I was one of the Chelsea kind of fans, and a lot of Arsenal fans were as well. And he's gone through, if you want to call it, the hero's path, you know? Like, you know, where you start off as the underdog kind of thing. You have to get people to believe in you, and now you're the guy. Like, everybody's looking to you to save the day. You know,
Shaka region.
Yeah.
Mitch, is this the plot of Dune? He just shared.
No.
I fucking hope not.
There's no colonization here, and no like space like genocide, please.
I regret bringing that up.
Fun fact: Kai has matched Xhaka's goals and assists total from last season.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, that was light work. I knew that was going to happen. I was so
I feel like that was the benchmark that a lot of people were like holding of like, hey, is Kai going to be able to match what Xhaka produced in just in terms of output? And we're in April, and he has. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, so much for that Marchverts bullshit Chelsea has. It's April, and he scored again. At halftime, we talked earlier about how Brighton was able to turn us around quite often, how there was a bunch of space in midfield. Gabby, were you considering any changes? Personally, I was on some, maybe we get rid of Jorginho and put Rice at the six and bring one of our other midfielders in.
I knew Georgie wasn't going to come off. I didn't see him coming out. I just didn't think Georgie was the problem. I feel like you fixed a lot of things that was happening in that midfield by taking Zinchenko off, but I knew nothing was going to happen. I was like, Mikel's not taking Zinchenko off. He's not taking Georgie off. I kind of wanted Martinelli to come on just to give him like at least 45 minutes. And then it gives the defense something to worry about him running at the back line. But I wasn't surprised that he didn't change anything. Okay. If I'm gonna be real.
All right. The second half started, and I didn't get to it quickly enough. I just had a bunch of text messages bitching at Zinchenko for whatever the fuck he did. I don't know what he did. I'll never know because I'm not watching this game back again. But the first notable moment from that half was the goal from Kai, his actual goal, and the cross came from Virginio. And that is a very strange thing to happen, people. Like, I've watched Virginio for a long time. I've been watching him since Napoli. I don't ever recall him running down the flank and crossing the ball into a striker. Coach, what's going on? Are we going to need to test this for PEDs? Are we about to lose our fucking titles because this guy did drugs? What's going on here?
I can't remember what game we started doing it in, but Jorginho was the 8 and 6, and Rice was the 6. And it's a feature. Maybe it was Liverpool. Yeah, that's when we started seeing that. But it's a feature of our game that we do now, where he will literally just go up really high and just do shit in it. Yeah, I don't know how else to describe it. He just does stuff, and this was one of those moments. And I think it's one of the key things here is unpredictability and just making ourselves really hard to read. Like, who the hell expects a geriatric, you know, Brazilian that pretends that he's Italian to be in your 6-yard box crossing it kind of thing? It's these little,
not too much on Jorginho. Okay,
I'm just saying like these marginal game structure, they're everywhere. You know what I mean? That you can look for them everywhere. And if it means that Brighton don't trap Jorginho because they think he just hasn't got that dog in him kind of thing, we get a goal out of it. It's that simple. And I'm not saying that's optimum Arsenal and it's ideal, but it's nice to know that we have players that can actually do that kind of thing. But I'm under no illusion kind of thing. I would prefer Saka there 100 times out of 100 rather than Jorginho. But it's good that, you know, players take responsibility, because on the other end of things, when we're defending kind of thing, that you see the attackers sometimes filling in that DM. Jesus filled in that DM a few times today. Do you know what I mean? He even did it last week as well at City kind of thing. The players really understand space. All of them do. So yeah, man, Mitch, like, you can rap on your guy, but he needs the mobility to get around. Let's not lie here.
I think Jorginho is really interesting because of his lack of mobility. And I think that, I mean, it was fucking awesome seeing him as a winger assisting Kai's goal. Obviously, I don't think he's there if Saka doesn't like go down hurt like a couple seconds before. But I just want to talk about Jorginho for a second, who I thought had a very good game. And, you know, Gabby mentioned earlier about him playing a full 90 and he's probably going to play against Bayern. And like, oh yeah, it's a lot of like running on the legs. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are doing running for him. Like, he's not like we've talked about his mobility. We talked about his athleticism. He's not the one doing a lot of running on this team. There's a lot of people like doing running for him, and he's able to do his job without like the athleticism. To where I was watching today's game and was like, there's not a doubt in my mind that Jorginho will be able. I think he will be playing he'll be playing European football until he's like 35, and I genuinely believe that, because I think that's just like the kind of player that he's built, where he's not built on athleticism. He never has been. Not a single time in his career has he been. So he's able to, like, as long as you're not throwing him as a lone six and in like a system where he's not going to be able to like truly succeed. Like, I don't feel comfortable playing Jorginho as a lone six for Arsenal, but if we have him like next to someone like Rice, I feel wonderful about it, because I think he's a really, really quality player that I really didn't think that I would adore watching this much for Arsenal. I thought he was just kind of a stopgap signing last January, and he'd be maybe around for 6 months to a year. I want him to sign another contract, like, because I genuinely think he can continue playing for a while.
No, don't do the whoa. I've been the captain of this ship for months. I said, re-sign Jorginho in the summer.
He's got one more year anyway. So let him just run that out. Like, we're not gonna get any value for him anyway. Let him run that out. I don't want us to sell him, but let's sign a new contract. Come on, guys.
I want us to do the like Bayern 30-year-old thing, where like each year you get an additional year based on how you're doing.
Well, that's what Wenger used to do. Wenger would literally, the player would get to 30, he just offer 1-year contracts. That's all he would do. And some players would take them, some players wouldn't, kind of thing. But they all knew once they hit 30, if the contract wasn't going to take them to when they were 32, 33 already, they were getting a 1-year contract like every year, kind of thing. So I'm not opposed to that, but making him commit for another 2 years on top of the 1 year he has already, I don't think that's why I squad planned, because again,
I didn't know he had another 1 year. I thought he was gone in the summer.
No, I'm pretty sure.
No, he has one more year.
Yeah, he has one more year.
Yeah. Gabby, I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I felt like this game was kind of chippy. Like the Brighton players were doing a little too much for my taste. I remember Stupinan like raising his hand near Ben White's neck at some point. There were some tackles I didn't like in there. I heard their fans booing Ben White from the beginning. Trossard got booed when he was coming on.
A bunch of unnecessary bullshit.
Yeah, what do you think of all that? Like Brighton are generally a cool club, but I'm not really sure about all this bullshit.
It was just a bunch of unnecessary bullshit. I don't know what was going on with the Ben Knight White thing. It's just very odd for them to be booing him. I don't know. Have they ever booed him before in a game?
I don't remember.
I can't recall.
Yeah.
That was just odd. I don't know.
I mean, he'd remember that.
Yeah. It's not like he had a series of bad tackles or anything. Like nobody was cooking him. That was just very weird. They just seemed like they tried to rattle him there. But the Trossard one, I expected that. I'll be real with you. I expected that because he did not leave Brighton on good terms. I don't know why you would boo Trossard rather than booing Deserby, though. But that's neither here nor there. That's y'all beef, not mine.
Hey, man, you know, when you're in the bathroom, you don't pee outside the bathroom. You pee in the toilet, you know. So the bathroom here is Brighton. And the toilet here is Deserby. And I'm sorry I brought up water sports on the podcast about soccer people. Sorry about that. Shit. Subs after the second goal. We had Martinelli for Saka, Tommy for Zinchenko, which made all of you guys happy because you're haters, and Trossard for Jesus. Martinelli came in on the right. This is two substitutions in a row.
Three
substitutions in a row? Mitch, I know you like him on the right because he scored your favorite goal ever against Newcastle on the right or whatever the fuck it was. But
I don't like him on the right because that just makes me think of that goal, and that goal's fucking awesome. Tomiyasu hits it over the top, and he just like hits it on a volley. It's incredible goal.
I can take it or leave it. However, do you think there's like a long-term goal here with this choice? Go on, Mitch.
Okay. I think that based on Saka's fitness, Arteta's maybe trying something to see if it can maybe work. Not as like a long-term goal for Martinelli by any means, but it's like, hey, you've played here before. Like, can you like do a job here if like Saka has to miss a game? Because I think we have a lot of players that can play on the right, but not a lot that like have really. Like Nelson can play on the right, Jesus can play on the right, Martinelli, Trossard. But like Saka has locked down this position for so long that like not many players get opportunities on the right. So I think maybe Arteta's just kind of curious. He's like, yeah, all right, well, I'll throw Martinelli there. If he does a job and Saka has an injury where like we can't play him in an important game, I feel comfortable playing Martinelli there. And maybe that's going to be the case. I haven't seen anything from Martinelli in these appearances where it's like, oh yeah, you should be playing on the right. But they've also been short appearances when the game's already been killed off. So I'm not exactly like putting a whole lot of stock into it. I don't know. I just feel like it's kind of a body on the field. But it is interesting that it's been chosen because it's usually him and Trossard coming on at the same time or close to each other. And it's typically Martinelli on the right, Trossard on the left, which I think I maybe would switch that, but that's just me.
Coach?
I think Mitch is on about switching them because I think Trossard has got a much better left foot than Martinelli. But I like the vision. I like inside forwards that play on their dominant sides, especially someone like Martinelli who's direct. One of the guys on the panel today, and I think he's probably at this point got a full-time job with Sky Sports at this point, but Theo Walcott was on Sky Sports today, and he's in probably my top three favourite Emirates-era players. I think just for what he is, him understanding his role, he just was so good. And what he was really good at was not overcomplicating it. Whether it was a shot or a cross, he'd run in behind, and he was one of our most deadliest finishers. And a lot of these finishes were coming in from the right and hitting it low across the goalkeeper, or sometimes hitting it high into the roof of the net at the near post. But it was just very, there was no frills about it. And it was almost like watching like a master at work. And I'm not saying I want Martinelli there, but whoever we go out in the summer kind of thing, if whether they're right footed or left footed, basically, it'll be nice to have an option where they're just an inside forward where it's going to be balls in behind, no thinking, get across the goal or put in the back of net yourself kind of thing. And they've got to be really, really pacey. You know, for example, if it's going to be Pedro Neto, I know Pedro Neto is really good on the ball, but because of how quick he is, we can simplify his game and just be like, get in behind, shoot or cross every time, basically. And that's, it's a good option to have, you know, especially if Saka's not fully fit and firing. Teams know that right-hand side is our creative hub, but then all of a sudden, if it turns into our output hub, how do you now defend against it? Because normally teams will push up against us on the right-hand side, but now Martinelli spinning in behind now, kind of thing, and now you're effed, kind of thing. So I'm not against it. I do like the idea of it. If we could re-sign Theo Walcott at 21 years old, I absolutely would. But yeah, I think it's an interesting option to have for sure.
Good stuff. After that second goal, it seemed clear to me that we decided to shut the game down. Mm. We basically just said we're going to play on the break. We took Zinchenko off. We took Jesus off. We took Saka off. Mm. Tommy, Trossard, Martinelli came on. And we just kind of played in a bit of a deeper block. I wouldn't call it a full-on deep block. Mm. And just told Brighton, like, okay, here's the ball. Do something with it. And they didn't do much. I don't really recall them creating anything. And eventually, Trossard and Havertz basically combined to steal the ball from Brighton. And Trossard had this long, he had a long time to think. It's like we scored this kind of goal as our final goal at Brighton. We did the same thing last year with a pass from Odegaard to Martinelli. That probably my favorite assist of last season, if I'm being honest. I thought that was a great pass, which gives Gabby ammunition for her. Odegaard has the best final ball in the squad. what'd you make of the finish? I think it was actually like the first thing that came to mind for me was Alexis Sanchez away to West Ham a couple years ago when he did the little.
Everybody said that.
Yeah.
Everybody said that. I was like, I know a lot of people say that Martinelli is our best finisher and he probably is, but like for me, it's Trossard is up there, like high. As soon as he got the ball and he was running through, I said Trossard scores 100%. I had no doubt in my mind he was going to put that into the back of the net. I was just trying to figure out how he embarrasses them. You're going to go around them or you're going to like. He just finds a way to make it look silky. Like, I love Trossard. That was just a really good play. And it actually didn't remind me of the Alexis one. I mean, I know he finishes in the same way, but it kind of reminded me of, was it Burnley or Sheffield when Martinelli and Kai were fighting for the ball and they like got the ball, but Martinelli got fouled and they just kept on playing and he just goes through and scores. That's what it reminded me of. I was just like, win the ball high and just do your business. That's it. Quick.
Yeah.
Did you expect them to celebrate?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Trossard is petty as hell.
He don't care about Brian.
he did not give a fuck. Right. He was petty as hell. He was probably thinking about what his celebration was going to be on the bus. Like, you know he was. You know he was. He was waiting to tweet so he could. He said it was waiting for full time so he can go back into the locker room and tweet. Are you not entertained? Like he was ready.
He didn't even do this shit.
Fuck your fans. Fuck your stadium. Fuck Brighton.
I was like, put that in your pipe and smoke it, Roberto Di Zerbi. Fuck you, bro.
Period.
Yeah. God, it feels almost inappropriate to not give the big guys at the back some props because there were a lot of really decent moments from them. Coach is super eager, so he's going to jump in right here.
I wanted to say that I know Gabby's been taking all the headlines recently, but Saliba was our best defender today, I think very much easily. Go on.
Remember in the chat, I said he was my man of the match until I was like, you know what? It's Havertz. Yeah. It's Havertz.
I think the key component here is his responsibility on the ball today helped us so much. I think that's probably part of the reason why we ended up breaking down Brighton. Because they're really out of position. Brighton are actually really good. Even though they give up a lot of chances, they make it really hard for you. And I can imagine De Zerbi with better players might be a real problem. But his responsibility on the ball today, he was dragging players in and then going back in field and then finding a pass, basically just, you know, taking out two or three players. And it was a consistent theme. And I think it made it, because we were struggling to progress the ball through the center of the pitch, he helped that so much, you know. But then when it came to actually defending, he just looked so dominant. Like Danny Welbeck is built pretty much similarly to Robert Lewandowski. Like he's just a unit. And Welbeck was just bouncing off him, you know. Like he was finding it hard to make those link ups because his first touch was off because Saliba was just all over him. And then whenever there was a scramble for the ball, like Saliba will come out of it like untouched, like zero mud on him. Like he probably came out. I think one time he came out of like holding a martini or something. I don't know. Like, he just looks so relaxed with it. But yeah, I think generally he was our best defender today. But in general, our defense, I think, are so comfortable and confident in each other now, is that even if something does go wrong, there's no panic there. It's always, someone's always covering. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't have to be another defender. It could be a midfielder, could be a forward. Someone's always covering. I think they've all learned to love, generally love defending. Late on, Jao Pedro has a clear shot on goal. Gabriel blocks it before he can make any progress. And I thought we scored because everybody's like crowded around Gabriel.
The way that he celebrated that block, I was like, oh yeah, this is something real for him. Like,
yeah, like I know that clean sheet bonus goes nuts, like, so for sure. He's probably gonna make another trip to Turkey off it.
Guys, so that was a very, I honestly don't feel we got out of second gear in this game, but that felt like a very comfortable 3-0 victory away to Brighton.
Professional performance.
Indeed it was, just like the Luton game. Let's move on to the next game. A brief preview of Bayern. They are coming to the Emirates. I'm sure some of us have some PTSD about some experiences with that very, very mean German club, with all the mean German people that have done very mean things to Arsenal. But Gabby, what are you expecting from a lineup standpoint? Who do you think is definitely playing in this game and that didn't play today? Is that a thing that's going to happen? Do you think anyone that didn't?
There's only,
next game,
let's say, there's only four players that I know for sure are starting. Poor. Like, for me, anybody else could be like Mikel. I mean, granted, barring injuries, of course. Like, Raya's going to be in goal. Gabriel and Saliba are starting, barring injuries. Declan Rice is going to start, and Kai Havertz is going to start. Everyone else is looking like, I don't know. I mean,
Odegaard.
Oh, yeah, Odegaard. Of course.
And Ben White, because the captain has to start.
It doesn't matter. He's going 90 minutes. but everybody else is like, I think all of this week and last week, he was keeping cards close to his chest. He's been like very, very, I don't know what the word is, but like, wait, careful with Martinelli. So I'm like, is he going to start, or are you going to keep him on the bench and you start somebody else? Are you going to start Jesus again? I would prefer Martinelli starts. I'm just going to put that out there. Obviously, I think Saka's going to start, but you never know. He might be like, that knock is maybe a little bit too much. Maybe he trusts somebody else. He'll probably, let's be real though, he'll probably start Saka. But the rest of them in midfield, I don't know. I genuinely, is this a game for Georgie? I would prefer Georgie to start, but who knows if he wants to put someone else in there. Number five may come in because he didn't play. Did he play at all this game?
No,
he
didn't. No, he didn't play at all this game. And we've been rotating well. Like, I personally think Kivior comes back in, but I just can't see Tommy starting after he's not started for a while. I just can't see that. I think Tommy probably comes in like later on in the second half sometime.
Okay.
Oh, and Ben White's gonna start, because who are we gonna rotate him with? Like,
I suppose Tommy could play.
He could, but will he? Ben White is, it would be on what, hopping on one leg, and he would still start.
This is true. Mitch, Bayern today took a 2-0 lead away to Heidenheim, who are 10th in the table in the Bundesliga, and they lost that game 3-2. Given that knowledge, given the fact that they have a lamed up coach, how do you feel about this game on Tuesday? Are you confident going into it?
Yeah, maybe it's like blind overconfidence, because like at the end of the day, it is still Bayern. Like, they have a lot of talented players. I think we can fucking smash them, and I think we should, and hopefully we do in the home leg.
I mean, I would love it. I would love it.
They have no away fans. They're coming off of an embarrassing fucking loss. And we're starting this leg at home, so we need to like come out firing. I would love, my dream, go to the Allianz with a 3-0 lead. That'd be awesome. I think we can totally do that.
I need that. Tears in my eyes. I will say
that, because you know, the Green Goblin mask for Tuchel is that 3-4-3. And I know there's a very good chance that's what he probably pulls up to the Emirates with, considering the injuries that they have now. I mean, if I list them out right now, no Neuer, no Koeman, no Sane, no Pavlovic.
I think not Neuer will be fit by the time they said he's already.
He's so he could be fit for the Arsenal game.
Okay. No Pavlovic, no Mazraoui, right? They're going to probably have to rejig their formation and rejig their plan for the game, because Bayern for sure they've got all the pedigree, all the experience. I mean, put it like this, Odegaard.
But they also have Eric Dier, so that cancels it out.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I can shit on Eric Dier all day. I genuinely think I'm a better footballer than him, but that's neither here nor there. But just looking at the players that they put out today, the front four, Gnabry, Musiala, Muller, and Kane, that's their front four. That's just not a bad front four. That front four would hurt.
Who's the biggest threat in that front four?
Oh, Musiala all day long. And it's not because he of course he can score, but it's the fact that he can eliminate two, three players at a time just by dribbling through them, which is just through the center of the pitch, I think is just invaluable. You know, they started Goretzka and Lehmann in midfield. Again, not the strongest, but you know,
food.
Yeah. But there's obviously all the players that are out. Yes, it's Arsenal need to be dominant on Tuesday, but I don't expect us to play like an expensive game. We're gonna try to be more methodical and probably try and bait them a little bit themselves, because they're gonna be feeling like we're the six-time winners. You know what I mean? We've beaten you so many times, kind of thing. We're probably going to try and play a game that's going to be a little bit more cuter, but there's goals there for Arsenal, like 100% there's goals there, but I don't expect us to be like pressing like how we basically did Liverpool. Like Arteta is way smarter than that. I think had we made Champions League last season and we were playing them, then I think I'd expect that, but this team is way more street smart now, to be honest. So I don't see that happening, but there's goals there for us for sure.
Honestly, I'm less. I know Musiala is a great player, and I would love him at Arsenal. But like, I'm less worried about him and more worried about Muller. Honestly, I'm more worried about the players who are like have been here, done this before. You know what I mean? Like they pull something out of their ass, some moment of magic to just get you across the line. Which is why Real Madrid have so many Champions League. I think those are the players you have to worry about, and I'm more like. This is a funny thing to say, but I'm more like, I just want them to be professional, get the job done at home. And hopefully we don't embarrass Bayern too much that they fire Tuchel and get that new manager bounce. That's all I care about. I need him at the away leg as well. That's what I need.
Well, Lothar Matthäus did an interview with Sky in Germany after the game, and he wants him fired before Tuesday.
Yeah. I was like, listen, just keep him for these two games. That's it. I don't care what you do for the rest of the season.
It's real FC Hollywood hours. Mitch, anything else on this buyer time before we get out of here?
Yeah, I don't know. I always struggle to like try. Like, we're the best team in the world, and that's not hyperbole. And I think that we need to be okay with saying that. I think we can be comfortable saying that we are the best team in the world. And so, like, yeah, we haven't been in the Champions League quarterfinals in 14 years or whatever. Bayern has like more European pedigree. Fine, whatever. I don't give a shit. We're the best team in the world. We can beat this team, and we should beat this team convincingly at home, especially with no fans.
This is why I don't like talking to kids. They have dreams and hope and aspirations and shit. Like, life hasn't been down enough yet to know how painful it is to have fucking... I mean, you know what? Let's not do this. But Mitch is not wrong. Arsenal is a very good team. Mm-hmm. Best in the world, arguable. Definitely not below the 3-5 range, and we ain't 3 or 5. We're 1 or 2, probably, I think, you know. So on that note, I think we should tell the people peace.
Peace.
And Real Madrid, please beat Man City. Peace.
Peace. Peace.
I take my shirt off. Work all day. Hustle and pray, got nowhere to go, got to catch my sugar, my plantation, sugar, my plantation, sugar, my plantation, sugar, plantation, plantation, plantation.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.